Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 420 of the Roguecast, recorded August 15th, 2023. Why? Because Turner D. Century. All right, so we are back. I was in Denver last week.
Yep.
It was about 15 degrees cooler.
Yeah, you must have come back rejuvenated and powerful.
No,
ready to wrestle a grizzly.
I am not, actually. I was very tired.
We bought a grizzly.
Randy is not shirtless bear fighter.
I am not shirtless bear fighter.
Shirted bear fighter.
I am a shirted bear fighter.
Obviously, the bear fighter part's true.
But anyway, Denver's nice.
It was
a good time. I went to Meow Wolf, which is like this art installation thing that they have one in Denver or Dallas too.
Okay, yeah, I saw you mention this and I did not know what you were talking about.
It's like this super cool immersive, like they put a premise that the premise of, there's one in Vegas, the premise is like it's a big Q-Mart. It's like a interdimensional mart.
Okay.
This one is like four civilizations crash together, no one knows why.
Uh-huh.
And so it's like a five-story building with all this stuff inside. It's like basically a sort of like science fiction world where bunch of stuff is crashed together, so it's like there was a bus that you like go into in the middle of it. It's like a little mini bus that was clearly had transported. There's all these like street signs that had merged together.
That's a cool idea.
It was very cool, and there's a story element to it where you can go and like tap these QR codes and get the elements. There were four missing people who they like the organization that was supposed to be doing the last stop, which was supposed to be separating all the worlds again.
Yep.
There's a conspiracy about someone who's like they're actually going to kill us all. Like you don't want to do this. And the four people who may be responsible for it, they were like they had disappeared them. It was all like a little bit of escape room in that way. Like you can spend hours. You can go for multiple visits trying to unwrap the story.
Yeah.
Very cool.
That sounds really awesome.
I recommend it. It was. I mean, it's not super cheap. It's like $50 a person. But you can spend hours in there.
It's called Meow Wolf.
Meow Wolf is the name of the, I think, the artist collective that puts it on.
Okay.
And so, like I say, there's
they must have had some serious funding if it's in a building that big.
There's one in Denver. There's one in Dallas, or in Grapevine, I guess, which is Dallas. There's one in Vegas. There's one in, I don't remember where else. There's a few.
Are they all the same?
No, they're all different.
Oh.
Why would they not have chosen Austin?
I don't know.
Feels like a better home than Dallas.
I know. But Dallas is bigger. That's the thing. Dallas always gets bigger stuff. Anyway, very cool. That was a fun thing to do. We have kind of a short podcast this week because we don't have a lot of topics. We haven't watched a lot of new stuff. Dave is catching up on My Adventures with Superman, but he's not caught up.
Right.
I don't think there's anything new that's like jumping out at me right at the moment. We haven't seen the new Turtles movie.
Right.
Or Last Voyage of the Demeter, which I think we all kind of want to see.
Yep.
I'm pressing play on Random Things.
Nick's watching Random Things.
Yep.
But we don't have anything to say about them.
So we're going to mainly talk about the comics this week, but it's low news this week, or maybe no news. I don't know.
We may be getting to that point just because there's not a lot of movie and TV stuff in the pipeline right now.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there's some interesting comic stuff coming up, and Nick, you made the post, I think, the other day on the Stores thing about some of the presentation that we've watched about the Transformers comics.
Which we can't talk about.
Right. We can't talk specifics, but we can say that we can say that we saw it, and it's kind of exciting stuff, right?
Yep. Yeah.
We can be real generic about it.
Well,
but
I mean, the
none
thing
of us, I think, I mean, yes, fans, but not exactly primed for, like, oh, I can't, this is going to be the time of a lifetime with a relaunch.
Yeah, no,
we've seen
a
lot of relaunches.
I think we're all pretty on board the Transformers relaunch.
Yeah,
the G.I. Joe relaunch.
It's some cool looking stuff.
Well, and this week sees the release of the third issue of Void Rivals, which is Kirkman's new thing. But we also have got issues 1 and 2 back in as well. So
right,
if you want to check in on what is now referred to as the Energon universe, this is a good time to do it.
Yep.
When we go through the single issues, we'll definitely talk a little bit more about Void Rivals, but I think avoid the kind of surprises in it because they're pretty neat.
Yeah. All right. So I just want to mention the new game stuff that we have this week. There's the new D&D release, the Bigby Presents Glory of the Giants, which as usual has a special variant cover.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all Giants. There's a ton of new Giant stats in there.
Yep.
Different civilizations, that kind of thing.
Yep.
How to run a campaign with giants. And then we also have the Practically Complete Guide to Dragons, which is not a rule book per se.
It's a lore.
But it's a lore book.
Lore-centric
all
one.
About dragons.
Yeah, you know, what's funny is I don't know that we knew it was exactly like that, but I was telling you off mic earlier that it's actually pretty common that we'll get people in sometimes who are more casual fans who are like, oh, I'm interested in Dragons or in the, you know, that side of Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah. But maybe they're not even a player or something like that. They just like the idea of the lore, the art, and all of that stuff. This is actually a great book for them too.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, for sure, it could like absolutely inform a D&D campaign, give you lots of springboard ideas and stuff. But there's like just it's not a stat centric book.
Right. We got the game Old Gods of Appalachia, which is the
based on a podcast.
Is it Monty Cook's games? I think it is. It's the people who do the Cypher system.
Right.
Cypher, yeah.
Yeah. And this is, it's based on a podcast. It is all about the sort of Cthulhu by way of West Virginia, I think is what I'd call it.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yep. It's sort of backwoods horror. At least the episodes I listened to in the podcast, I think, tended to be set like kind of like turn of the century, previous century, so like 1900s,
right.
Late 1800s,
not
maybe
1999 during the Matrix time.
Not in Prince's 1999. the previous turn of the century. But anyway, it's a cool podcast, by the way. High production values, like lots of good audio effects and very immersive like environments.
Did you look at the game at all?
Just briefly, but like I didn't even see like, does it have classes? What are the mechanics kind of like? I don't quite know.
I assume it's very Cthulhu. I think you assume you play investigators and that kind of thing.
I don't know. Like everybody in the show that I listened to was a hillbilly.
Okay.
And when I say that, they weren't all hillbillies, but they were like, they're rural folks from towns in and around the mountains and stuff like that. And they're you know, they would occasionally talk about like going into the city or something like that. So I think that you can have some people from, you know, you can have a wider variety. But
so you're gonna have skills like making moonshine, playing banjo.
But you know, like I always think of, you know, everybody in Cthulhu, a lot of times you're like scholarly academics.
Yep.
And then like crazy. One or two tough guy detectives or like an archaeologist who's an Indiana Jones knockoff, mm-hmm. or something like that. Here I think it might be, you may be a little bit more salt of the earth type. You know, morons. Sorry, just a shout out for the fans there, for the Mel Brooks people out there. But there was like, there's people who know some like little kind of common magic and things like that.
Okay.
And like a woman early on who was like, this again, just a podcast that I know.
Yeah.
Who was like practicing magic, and she was like a witch, but like kind of not an evil witch, but was like really kind of bold and reckless, almost like, you know, like Brer Rabbit kind of vibe.
Okay.
And she was like, kind of like, you ain't gonna come get me, devil. She's like, I'm always gonna be a step ahead of you. And the episode plays out as this kind of like over the decades war of wills between her and like a demon or a devil or something like that.
Okay.
And it's real fun. Like there's a lot of color to these and a lot of energy and tail spinning kind of things. It wasn't like scary, but it's eerie. So I actually think it could be a good setting. I'll have to read up a little bit more on it. Maybe I'll do a report back next
time. I'm curious to check in on this
next episode.
The RPG looks beautiful. It's like a big hardcover. Yeah. The art's really spectacular, so I'm definitely checking that out.
I mean, I have to assume that I don't know how many years the podcast has been running, but I think it's at least like 3 or 4 years, and probably has a lot of good lore material built up, because I think it is all a shared setting. And so they might do episodes all in and around it, maybe in different time spans and stuff like that. But I think it all kind of builds off of itself.
Well, we are starting to get, Renegade is going to do that Night Vale podcast RPG.
Oh, that's right.
We're starting to get some podcasts that get RPG, which is good. There's good settings for those.
What is the term TTRPG?
Tabletop.
Oh, duh. Sorry. I was just reading the Old Gods of Appalachia.
So, Dave, just to go back to something you said earlier, remember the obscure Marvel villain Turner D-Century?
I'm familiar with
his powers, I believe, were to change technology back to like 19th century technology.
He was like a straw hat wearing kind of guy, who the kind of person you would see on one of those big wheeled bicycles.
Yes, yeah. Paul F. Tompkins would play him in the Marvel movies.
Yep, and he could be in a barbershop quartet.
Could absolutely. So, do you think there's a Turner D. Century 2099 who turns things back to like 2000? He's like, he turns your stuff into like a, he like Ravage's garbage truck would not be affected, obviously.
Right.
But everything else.
Deep cut there. If you were a 1999 devotee,
yes.
kind of person,
yeah.
You'd probably be wearing like some combination of like kind of club wear, kind of leather club wear,
yeah.
but like maybe still with a flannel t-shirt to represent grunge.
Yeah,
in there.
Kind of like the Matrix meets Nirvana.
Yeah, a little bit of a crumpled up time person.
Turner D. Century in the future.
Turner D. Grunge. Yeah, it's not a pretty picture, folks.
Anyway, you can't say Turn of the Century without me thinking of Turner D. Century.
Go ahead and Google him, y'all. Yeah. It's like literally like Turner D.
Century.
D. Century.
What like, does D stands for?
Dwight? Dickhead. Yeah, he is not what you call a great villain. Did he get killed by Scourge?
He did get killed by Scourge in The Bar with No Name, which I know you hate.
I don't know. I think people kind of maybe know about Scourge if you're old enough. But Scourge was a guy who was like a vigilante who was killing off lame Marvel villains in the mid or late
80s. Century was a righteous kill. That's
that was fair. A righteous kill. Several of them were. A few of them weren't.
Do you know what hero Turner D. Century belongs to? Do you know who he was a villain for? You're never going to guess.
Okay, if I'm never going to guess, then I'm going to guess Black Panther.
Spider-Woman.
Okay.
He was created in 1980 by J.M. DeMatteis.
Okay.
And Steve Lealoha. His real name is Clifford F. Michaels, which means I don't know what the F or the D stands for. He was the son of a millionaire chauffeur. His abilities included flame-throwing umbrella, flying bicycle, and a horn intended to kill anyone under age 65.
You know, that horn sounds like something that happened in a Deadpool issue. That just got written in.
Oh, man. Yes, he terrorized businesses in San Francisco that he deemed impure and tried to kill anyone under the age of 65 in New York City using a hypersonic weapon of his own design that he dubbed the Time Horn.
So this guy is the flip side of what they were afraid of in the 60s, the radical youth,
yes.
who were like, don't trust anyone over 30.
Yes.
Turner D. Century is like, I do want to take it back to a simpler time, but not the 1950s, back to 1890.
Yeah. He wore a costume consisting of typical Southern clothing, as would be worn by a young man of the middle class in the year 1900. A straw boater, a striped jacket, and white trousers.
You know, he committed.
He did.
He committed to the bit. Yeah. I need to read this issue, because I want to see Spider-Woman punch him.
He was resurrected by the Hood in Punisher number 6 in 2009.
Yeah, I'm going to bet that's where he had the horn that kills people under 65.
No, that was in the 80s. That was when Spider-Man and old man Dominic Fortune tried to stop him.
Okay, sure.
I believe Dominic Fortune was like, I'm older 65, what do I care? And Spidey was like, but I'm not.
And he's like,
All right, I guess I'll stop this madman.
Dominic Fortune was like a pulp hero, right?
He was a pulp hero. Pulp hero got old. Anyway, Turner D. Century, bit of a diversion there. Like I said, short podcast, there's going to be more of this.
Yep, sorry.
We got to vamp a little bit, and that's what's going to happen.
I'm going to suggest, though, people go ahead and Google Turner D. Century, but also Google Dominic Fortune. I always thought he had a cool look.
Dominic Fortune's cool, I like that character.
There is a kind of a cool idea of basically being old man Doc Savage. That's a solid premise.
Yeah. Okay, we also got the board game FICA. Which is a clever coffee break.
Okay.
This is a two-player game. It's a FICA is an integral part of Swedish life, and it's about making space in your daily life to chat over a hot drink as you nibble delicious pastries. In the game, you are...
This is, by the way, why they have a high standard of living and the high percentage of people who like their lives.
So, this is a matching game. It's a two-player game. You are a street cafe owner trying to out-earn your competitor by arranging the cards in your own cafe and manipulating those of your opponent, so you're the first to win two rounds. Sounds like a fun game. Very cool, beautiful design.
Yeah.
Looks like a fun game. We also got Freelancers, which is a new game from the guys who made...
It's Plaid Hat, isn't it?
It's Plaid Hat Games. The guys who made Dead by Daylight. What's the zombie game that was like such a big hit?
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about.
Is that Zombicide?
No. Nope. What are you talking about? Nope. The one that's like the cooperative one, but it's got a storytelling mechanic.
Oh, Dead of Winter?
Dead of Winter.
Oh, yeah.
Which was, that used their Crossroads mechanic, which is like a storytelling mechanic.
And this one does too.
And this one is this as well. This is a,
It's like a fantasy-based Crossroads game?
Yep, it's like a fantasy RPG, basically.
The art on the cover, I mean, the art on the box is great. I need to look at this,
because those are things that interest me.
So it's post-apocalyptic. It starts off, congratulations, humanity is dead.
So they do have a theme. That goes with the zombie stuff.
The bad news is they all left behind their garbage and a broken gig economy. That's why we need freelancers like you ready to take any job, no matter how loathsome. You delve into the ruins, brave the wilds, and slay the hordes of hideous creatures so you can gather loot and return home.
So... Do we happen to know? Is there baked into this premise any particular reason why, like, some sort of fantasy kingdom rearises?
Magic, monsters, murder. Nope.
Okay.
You
know, I always did kind of like, you know, there is like a specific things that happen in Shadowrun which is like a cyberpunk future, but where magic returns.
Right.
But they had a very specific trigger event.
Magic
and stuff
always
in that.
Returns, Dave.
I mean, I did, but like, well, you gotta tell me why.
Because.
It's not gonna do it.
Okay, fair enough. Because Merlin.
Thank you. Okay. That's all I all asked. Right.
Because Eternity Century.
Why? Because Eternity Century.
We got the Powerners RPG has the Phantom Gambit. It's an adventure for that RPG. We got Great Western Trail New Zealand. This is a game I have not played, but this is the third in a trilogy of games.
Yes.
There's the original, there's Great Western Trail, something I don't remember, and New Zealand. And this is a beloved designer and a beloved game series, and so that has finally come out.
Are you trying to sort of survive like Oregon Trail, or is it a different kind of game?
I don't know.
Okay, I'm going to look into that.
All right, you do that. We also got...
Sounded kind of condescending. You do that. You have fun with your little Oregon game.
We got Gods of Metal Ragnarok. This is another RPG. This is people who go into the magic heavy metal world.
Okay.
And become gods of metal.
I think that's we've seen games that skirt flirt with this, I should say. And there's like a board game, you know, that like Epic Spell Wars definitely does that.
I was going to say, that feels kind of like.
But
this is going
I can't think
more.
Of like a really sort of a full blown. This is a role playing game?
This is a role playing game. You know, remember the video game Brutal Legend?
Yep. Yeah.
I feel like it's that. Yeah. It's like you go in this realm where it's like everything is metal. And
Jack Black with an axe.
Yep. We got a very specific game called Siliconvania, in which I believe you are vampires in Silicon Valley.
Who's to say that vampires don't run Silicon Valley?
I mean, it would make a lot of sense.
Tom Petty sang about that in Into the Great Wide Open. He's like, the vampires walking through the valley. Oh. It's a thing.
That's what that was about.
Yeah.
Oh,
he tried to warn us.
I thought it was about a girl with a tattoo, and she met a girl. I met a girl with a tattoo too.
The tattoo too. Yeah. It was 1988, and the prophet Tom Petty tried to warn us.
So, the Vampire Council is looking to hire a new city planner to turn Transylvania into the world's newest tech haven. You and your rivals are competing to land the job, create a diverse cityscape for vampire and animal life, provide plenty of blood banks for your citizens, secure contracts, and bring aboard the best specialists in the industry. You want to turn Transylvania into Siliconvania.
Okay. Points for being different.
Yeah, it's a WizKids game, so it's solid.
Buy that for the tech nerd in your life.
Yep. There's a game called Ensemble, which is a co-op game where you're basically trying to build a musical.
Okay.
You all collaborate to build a. You vote without communicating on the cards that are displayed to try to match the other cards and make a sort of like a finished symphony kind of thing.
Okay. That sounds fun.
It's 2 to 10, maybe it's a little party-ish, party game-ish, but it looks fun. And then there's a game called Aurum, which is about metals. It's a trick-taking game.
Okay.
And the theme of it is, like, gold and other currency. But it's, you know, if you know trick-taking games like The Crew or Cat in a Box or any of those.
I'm going to nod like I know what they are, but I actually haven't really played them, so sure.
It's I think the main trick-taking game is Bridge.
Okay, yeah, it's which, a...
I'm terrible at trick-taking games, but I know they're a beloved thing. And that is one of the big releases from Asmodee for the year. And that's our games that we have for the moment. Let's talk about comics for August 16th. And let's start with the indies this week, because there's a fair amount of them.
Yep.
And let's start by talking about the thing I think y'all are definitely the most excited for, and I was pretty happy with, too. And that is Void Rivals number 3.
Yep. I'm going to just remind people... Void Rivals is Kirkman's book that leads into the, what do they call it? The
Energon Universe.
The Energon Universe.
Oh, but, they've got a cool logo for the Energon Universe.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised they haven't put it on the cover of Void Rivals.
I bet they're going to do it on, like, the fifth printing or whatever. Yeah. But I bet they did want it to be secret at first.
Yeah, that's true.
But essentially, each issue this gets more and more Transformers-y.
Yep.
Issue 1 was almost no Transformers at all. It was basically an Enemy Mine kind of riff.
Yep.
It did have some neat reveals that were just its own thing.
There was one big Transformer.
And there was a Transformer in it. But it was almost slightly incidental to the plot.
Yeah.
But cool.
Yeah.
And in fact, yeah, okay. Then in issue 2, there was another reveal.
A very obscure reveal.
An obscure one. And then in issue 3, some less obscure ones. But this is for people kind of... Right now, it's a little bit... For the kind of the deeper cut fans, mm-hmm. it's stuff that you might, if you watch, you know, after the Transformers movie came out,
yeah,
and it projected forward into the future into the early 2000s, and most of the action was set on Cybertron, a little more futuristic, a little bit of interaction with other alien species and stuff like that. That's what they're kind of bringing in, is that Cybertron element. It was kind of what I was guessing, sort of hoping it would be,
right?
Which was to say, and I still don't know quite how they're going to do it, but it's sort of a, what would it be like to be living like another civilization near Cybertron, having to deal with what's probably, what sounds like a quagmire of war?
Well, the galaxy yeah. is very big, so there's...
The galaxy is big, but they're, we know that our characters in it are going to run up against this, yeah. probably.
But the Transformers aside, I actually really like the characters that they that Kirkman has created.
Well, he made a point to make sure it like stands on its own.
Well, yeah. It's interesting. It's almost like survival sci-fi. It's a couple. It's a
yeah.
It's a couple of pilots from a civilization that's been at war for a long time, forced to work together
to try to get back home,
discover things about themselves, about the things they keep running into. There's some great action sequences in them.
This mm-hmm. is a sort of a captivity and possible escape sort of oriented issue.
Yep.
And kind of exactly, they're like on a pretty large ship, and you know, they there's kind of that fun feeling, almost, you know, like, you know, if this was a game, Randy, it'd be a little yeah. like a dungeon crawl. Like, let's see what's in this room. Let's see what's in this room. Oh, what's in this room is very scary.
Yep.
Kind of thing. And but yeah, it's cool. Like each issue has some survivalist element, and you're also kind of finding more about these alien civilizations, but they're very approachable. You know, they're like, he's not exactly doing hard sci-fi,
no.
But he has some kind of neat ideas about them. And yeah, every issue has been fun. If you didn't know anything about Transformers, you could probably still enjoy this as a sort of, not quite space opera, but also not, certainly not hard sci-fi. But a kind of a soft sci-fi space opera from Kirkman that would just be like, you know, this is a guy who did Invincible and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You can kind of expect some twists and turns, and it hasn't quite, it hasn't any, had any of the ultra violence yet, but we'll get there, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But there is Transformers stuff in it.
This one, yeah, in fact, this one has a 3-page preview of Transformers number 1 by Daniel Warren Johnson in the very back, and yep. you're going to want to check this out.
Yes.
Also, I think Nick mentioned earlier, we have 1 and 2 back in, so if you haven't read any of it, we have 1, 2, and 3 of Void Rivals this week.
Yep.
It's worth picking up.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of like, it's kind of fun to have, as I was saying before, when we maybe for the first issue, a Transformers thing, and ultimately a shared with the G.I. Joe universe, that it has unexpected things happening in it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is definitely going to be, you know, you'll see some of the classic Transformers, in the, at least in the previews and ads for the actual comic. But, like, exactly how things are playing out seems like it's not going to be quite as expected, and yet it is also, I think, going to, like, it, if you're an old-school fan, you're going to have a good time.
Yeah,
I was going to say, it's kind of nice to see old-school fans enthused. Like, these creators grew up with these yep. comics and these cartoons.
And I'll say this. IDW, I respect what they did with the Transformers, where they were like, they were actually pushing some sci-fi boundaries and some conceptual boundaries. Yeah,
they were sort of deep and but lore heavy.
But you could argue that it also kind of got away from what people originally wanted from that, which is just robots shooting the shit out of each other.
that most recent IDW run was like politic, you know, backroom stuff. It was
dry.
It was dry, and there was not a lot of transforming.
Yes.
And there was not a lot of shoots.
Right.
Right. And then at a certain point where you're like, I feel like you might, though, the writer was like, you might rather be writing some more straight science fiction books than a thing that is about Autobots wage their battles to destroy the evil forces of the Decepticons.
Yes.
To coin a phrase.
Yes, the premise is right there in the song, y'all.
I'm extremely happy with what Image and Skybound are doing with these
So far, so good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to more.
Yep, none of us were expecting it, but there we are.
Okay, let's talk about Godzilla War for Humanity.
This is fun.
This was a weird book that was like a surprise fun book for me this week. I don't know what if Godzilla fans are going to like it, because it's drawn in kind of a weird undergroundy sort of style.
Yeah,
it's kind of cartoony and stuff like that.
I think the things we liked about maybe the
Did
things
you say
that,
like a Robert Crumb kind of style,
not quite that underground. But if anybody knows who Howard Cruz is, it reminded me of his artwork.
Well, I
Bob
think
Fingerman.
Yeah, and But like, actually, like I love the sense of scale and stuff in it when the flashbacks. I actually really love that art look. You know, if you ever look at, like, artists like Charles Burns or anybody who does, like, something that's meant to look a little bit like old EC comics, they have a really sort of beautiful inking style, and there's a certain look to it.
I love
and this. This has some of that.
I love the colors.
And the colors are great.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
the premise is what interested me, and when I was making the sign for it, I had no idea what the art was going to look like, so I just figured it'd be kind of a standard realistic-looking, semi-realistic-looking Godzilla comic. There's a woman who ends up sort of getting saved by Godzilla when she's a kid. She, not like he tried to save her, it just happened.
It just happened.
And then,
he rescued her out of a tree.
But now that she's grown up, she's a professor, and she's written about this extensively, and she's one of the sort of leading thought.
She's doing a TED Talk.
She's doing a TED Talk kind of thing, and this guy busts in on her TED Talk, and he's kind of a tech bro dude. Mm-hmm. But who kind of wants to work with her on something, but is also kind of accusing her of some things on the stage and making a big to do, and it seems like there is some new kaiju.
Yep.
Yeah.
Got some weird fungal basis for it. Yeah. It's weird.
It's a bad dude.
It's a bad dude, and they need her help with it. He's putting together a team. And, I don't know, there's flashbacks and there's other glimpses, they show you Monster Island where the little baby Godzilla, whose name I always forget, different baby Godzilla.
My Godzilla lore knowledge is very...
Yeah, all of our Godzilla lore knowledge is weak, so if you're yelling at us right now through the mic,
you have to
Rob...
you have to know, we don't care.
Yeah, Russell, that's right. But the rage is fun. I like the monster fights in this. They're weirdly brutal for as cartoony as they were. You'll see limbs ripped off and stuff.
I love the fact that the artwork actually kind of looks like the 70s movies where somebody's in a rubber suit.
Yeah, it's true.
I know that sounds kind of odd and maybe a little lame. It's not. It's
kind of
delightful.
Puffy looking and weird, but then suddenly weirdly violent.
Yeah, weirdly violent.
It's not gory, but it's just a little surprisingly violent at times. Anyway, if any of that stuff sounded interesting, Godzilla, was it War for Humanity?
War for Humanity.
All right. Check it out. One.
Yeah, writer I don't recognize, Andrew McLean, but it's good first issue.
New to me.
Then we've got The Cull from Image, from Kelly Thompson and artist Mattia De Luis, which is spectacularly beautiful.
Yeah, it's kind of almost hard to describe how detailed these paintings are.
It looks like a cutscene from a video game at points.
Was this pitched as? Goonies meets
Something is Killing the Children.
Is Killing the Children.
And honestly, it's a good pitch.
It also reminded me a little bit of Die, where there's clearly at least some sort of history with these young characters. They're in their teens.
Yeah. And it has a Stephen King vibe a little bit too.
Yeah. Sure. All the kids on bikes sort of stories for and things like that. But yes, this is a sort of a gathering of the team, and it even feels like the Goonies because it's seaside town. They have these dark rocks along the shore that are kind of weird and mysterious, but that if you watch Goonies, you'll remember the rocks and stuff.
Yeah, but it's a group of teenagers getting together to film a movie, supposedly. Yeah.
Right, but there seems to be more going on.
Yes.
They specifically are getting up at 2 a.m., 3 a.m., something that.
Yep.
And you kind of meet the characters through the people that they're with, parents and other people who are are you really going out at 2 a.m. to do this with your friends? And there's...
I think you get a really good snapshot.
It's very conversational.
You get a snapshot of all the characters and get a feel for them pretty easily.
I agree.
Which is unique and I appreciate.
And it does get to, by the end of it, some crazy shit.
It does.
So it's not all set up. It's there is actually some reveals in the first issue.
But the artwork is stunning.
Yeah, it's really impressive. You just gotta flip through it. It's crazy.
And I was really enamored with the overall story. I think it's fun. Doing some things we've seen before, but in different ways.
Yeah.
So the thing
that seems like they will be engaging with. I don't want to really say too much.
Right, I don't want to spoil that.
But seems like that's probably going to feel a little bit different from some of these other stories.
Yep.
It's not going to feel like Stranger Things, but there's still some elements of it.
The other vibe I got from a little bit is that Seasons Have Teeth that we really liked.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit of that sort of life in the face of larger-than-life sci-fi type concepts.
Yeah, yeah. There's for sure there's an element of that, and I suppose I might... sort of mentioned with that same thing in mind, The Mist. The movie based on Stephen King's The Mist.
For those of you who like JMS Straczynski's Supreme Power type stuff, he has a superhero book from AWA who have been doing his, like, the Resistance and the virus superpower world they did. This is a new series. I don't know if it's tied to that world. I don't think it is. It is basically a woman who is a a jewel thief, a superpowered international thief. She's going to do a heist to fund her early retirement, and the U.S. government sends a superhero team to attack her, basically to bring her in.
Yep.
And something goes wrong, and her family is killed. And then she starts listening to these voices in her head and becomes like a superpowered Joker serial killer type thing.
What was the... He also... JMS also did a sort of realistic superhero thing. What was the one he did for Top Cow?
Rising Stars. That was the first thing he did. That's right.
Yeah. And these all have elements of that. It seems like he likes to do the kind of realistic superheroes. He's not like... It has elements of Wild Cards, which we've talked about a few times on this before. But, you know, he's been doing his own take on that since, this would be what, early 2000s?
Yeah.
And it seems like a playground he's pretty comfortable in, so if that appeals to you, what's it called?
It's called The Madness.
The Madness.
We have the latest in the Disney villains. They've done Maleficent, they've done Scar. This is Hades from Hercules.
Yep.
And I'm not a huge Hercules fan. I've seen it maybe a couple times. But this does include, I see Icarus... the centaur Chiron, and Jason of Jason and the Argonauts.
Did it have the pan god person in it? Danny DeVito played?
He does not seem to be in it.
Okay, I bet he shows before it's over.
Maybe he will. But anyway, Hades versus Jason and the Argonauts, looks like.
Hades is a good villain, despite the debaggery that is his voice.
Yep.
He's a good voice actor for it, so... I think he's a good call to explore.
I know some people really like the Hercules, and particularly Hades. So.
Yep.
All right. Let's talk about Alpha.
Yeah.
There are actually three new X-books this week,
which is sort of bringing the Krakoa era of X-Men to the end and relaunching in characterizations that basically seemed okay. Vindicator, Puck, Shaman, all of that stuff. Canada's premier superhero.
Brother.
It's Monet.
Is that Monet?
Can turn up.
Do they have like a specific mission statement?
Well, it opens with Psylocke trying to sort of Storm run
the twins.
Basically, Storm is the leader of that. Yes,
Boy X-Men.
Things do not turn out exactly the way they expect, and it's kind of an interesting status quo.
Okay,
Cap feels very Cap. Who's writing this? I can't remember.
It's Jerry Duggan.
It's Jerry Duggan.
X-Men.
He did get a good job of capturing all the voices, I thought.
Okay.
It was a little less kill-happy than the Hellfire Gala, so I was a little bit more on board. No, but I kind of like
Isn't
where this
Hellfire
is going.
The Hellfire Club Gala proving to be less kill-happy than it looked?
Yes, it is. But I thought it was a good first issue. There's also another teaser for Who Are the Gods, Jonathan Hickman's new book.
His new book, yep.
Which I think they're doing like one-page teases throughout a bunch of different Marvel titles.
Yep. Hope he does stuff with Celestials.
This also incorporates Deadpool back into the team in kind of a more unique way than I was expecting.
Chauffeur?
But they reference him in...
I'm sure it's okay to let him drive a Quinjet. Oh, shit.
They reference him and Captain America's relationship that has been explored in the past a little bit.
I'm sad that I want to... I'm just trying to... I cannot imagine what the link is between Cap and Deadpool.
I mean...
They're spandex.
Well, I mean, Deadpool's abilities are derived from Captain America.
Oh, are they?
Well, Weapon X. Captain America was Weapon Alpha, or whatever you want to call him.
Oh, they're just like hockey fans or something.
They could be just hockey fans.
But you like this one?
I did. I thought it was a good first issue.
Look at us. None of us are like really keeping anything close watch on this right now, but we just sort of at least partially recommended two all of X books. And what are we ready for the third?
Yes, let's talk about Dark X-Men.
Dark X-Men.
This is
talk about a weird team.
So it's Madeline Pryor, who is still this. I saw this is her still coming off of what's it? Not Inferno. What was it called? Dark Web.
Dark Web.
So she now runs Limbo.
Yep, Magic gave her Limbo.
So she, I guess, Havoc is with her.
Yes.
And so she's got her own little weird team.
You mean romantically?
Yes.
Or, okay.
And then also
quite the bad girl date there.
This opens with a with sort of or early on. There's a raid on mutants who have been taken by Orcus, I think. They're on their way to a re-education camp. Nothing creepy about that.
Sure.
And they are rescued by a team made up of Gambit, Archangel, and Maggot, who's an X-Men you may or may not know of.
If you're a 90s X-Men fan, you know who
and,
he is.
And they run up against what seems like Wolverine, but isn't Wolverine. Correct. If you know certain characters, you look at the cover, you will know who that is. And then there's also, like, Azazel, Nightcrawler's teleporting daddy.
Yep.
Actually his teleporting daddy, or was that just a...
That may have retconned. I
hope it's been retconned.
But he is, like, an actual, like, demon of some sort, and I like it best when Nightcrawler's just a mutant. Yep.
There's also some weird shapeshifter guy. I'm not sure who that is.
Okay. Yeah, the vibe I got was, well, like you know, Archangel, Havoc, sure, yep. That's all fine. But then some of these people are pretty bad dudes.
Yeah.
But
you have to band together when you're being hunted.
Right.
Like, completely.
Right. And that is another X-Men tradition. But isn't trusting villains what got them in this spot that turns out, like, it turns out Mr. Sinister did a sinister thing?
I mean, they
should... And, like, ruined all of Krakoa.
Honestly,
because he...
if they had just not trusted Sinister...
He was
Sinister,
set for evil.
That
maybe they shouldn't have given amnesty to the guy named Mr. Sinister,
like John Cena in Transformers. It's right there.
They're called Decepticons. Yeah.
This did have a cool little thing that I. So apparently, Limbo is a recognized, like, by the American government. So they have an embassy in, like, New York City. Okay. I thought that was a fun idea.
You know, I don't like things that take the make the magic stuff kind of real prosaic, where it's like, oh, yeah, and, you know, you're walking around the Marvel Universe, they just have, like, an embassy in a magic world. It makes the magic world less magic to me.
Yeah.
As an idea, like, if I were reading, like, a sci-fi novel, or, like, a fantasy novel series, like urban fantasy, and that had happened, and then I'd be fine with it. In Marvel, it actually, like I said, it makes it seem a little less cool to me, but I'll allow that it doesn't all have to be for me, as it turns out.
Sure.
And we'll allow it. But I am filing a formal protest.
Sure.
You're
going to
file it with Jen?
Yep. I've already filled out some the paperwork for it to let them know that they need to have Limbo cut loose from the United Nations.
All right. Yep. You can file that with the Quiet Council and they will take it up in the next meeting, which will take up 16 pages of 22 in the next issue.
You know what's weird? I tell you, they're all dead.
I hear the dead people are coming back real fast. Now, let's just go back to real quick Goblin Queen dating Havoc, since we have so much time here.
Sure.
Now, Madeline Pryor is essentially some kind of weird clone of Jean. So basically, the brother is dating the chick who is an exact duplicate or very close to that of Jean Grey.
Don't think too much about it.
Man, it's getting...
Don't think too much about it.
When you are a Summers family member, your life is weird.
Yeah.
So
this means...
Did they ever touch on that before? Like, when Scott was supposed to have, like... X-Men had supposedly died, in quotation, when they joined X-Factor?
They might have.
Did they kind of... Do that? I feel like my brain is like.
Did they kind of do what?
That Alex and Madeline had a thing
before.
Let me point this out to you. Would make this maybe slightly less or worse.
Okay.
I believe that Alex became interested in Madeline after she became the Goblin Queen. So what he likes isn't Jean Grey. He likes Underboot.
I mean, she has a very hot costume.
It's true.
Historically, one of the hot costumes of the 80s.
It's one of the best, yeah.
The villain evil. It has evil hotness.
We had the statue for her, and we sold it a lot.
Yeah.
We did.
Yeah. While you're Googling stuff, go ahead and Google and take off Safe Search and just see what happens.
Goblin Queen. And it's got to be spelled Goblyn.
Yes.
Yeah, it's true.
Goblin Queen.
Yep. You know what's funny, Randy, is that will also pull up people's fan art of actual goblins.
Oh, for sure.
Even with the spelling and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Don't search Hot Goblin Queen unless you want... Don't do it at work.
It's Gorlanka the Goblin Queen.
Gorlanka the Goblin Queen.
But anyway, so what you're saying is that Alex wasn't thinking, oh, this is kind of weirdly, vaguely incestuous.
No,
he
just,
was thinking,
like,
oh,
hot,
she's hot.
Hot evil redhead. That's as far as the thought process went.
I guess, Alex, that's forgivable.
Does that mean... You know, I'm not following that... No, don't go there.
Don't go there.
I had never put the connection together of him, like, dating basically Jean's clone and how messed up that is.
It's super messed up. She only dates Summer's brothers.
Well, her last fling was with...
She better not get together with Cable.
Wasn't it Ben Reilly?
Ben Reilly, yes.
That was her
Goblin
last
Queen?
Fling.
Yeah, she likes clones,
I'll
too.
Allow it. Yeah.
That's the least
incestuous thing she's done.
They have that in common. They like clones. Anyway, there's also Marvel's Voices, which is usually their, like, they did for Native American. They do a Pride issue.
Yep.
This kind one of a is, spotlight on diversity.
It's diversity. This one is an X-Men focused one.
When I was reading, like, their introduction, they did seem to be, they mentioned somebody who was, like, somebody being queer.
Yep.
In one of those, like, queer Latina writer or something like that.
Well, it kind of makes sense, because the X-Men, as Vita Ayala, who writes the intro, sort of touches on, is that the X-Men has always been a metaphor for various, whether it's race or sexuality, or they have always been used as that. And so to do a flat-out, like, Pride or diverse stories featuring the X-Men makes a lot of sense. So specifically what they're using here is they've got Rogue and Gambit. I'm not sure where on any umbrella they fall, but
I'm not sure either. Although I think she lived as essentially even an ace for a while.
Yeah. And Gambit is totally bi.
Yes,
that's true. That's true.
Then we get a story of Iceman who is gay, canonically gay, and. One of the Wakandan mutants actually was introduced by Tom Taylor. I think is in there too.
I liked the what I saw of the Mystique and Destiny story.
That was really good, and that takes place during X-Men 140 to 141, which I know is
Days
of
Future
era.
Past.
Yeah,
it's also really beautifully drawn.
Yeah.
I thought that had particularly really nice. Good artwork.
It's a good little story.
If you're looking for some like X-Men vignettes, there you go.
We got another chapter in the Contest of Chaos as. Agatha Harkness pitches Marvel characters against one another. This is the Iron Man annual, and it is Iron Man versus Storm.
That is, by the way, you know, just on a pure fan level, solid power balance.
Yep.
I think.
I don't know if you know this. Iron Man can absorb electricity. I don't know if you know this. Lightning is electricity.
That's an interesting point. But maybe she can overcharge his armor.
That might happen. We'll see.
Uh-huh.
He's fought Thor.
He's fought Thor before, yep.
And Storm has also fought Thor.
I remember one time Moondragon was mind-controlling Thor and had seduced him.
I think I still put my money on Storm.
Do you?
I do.
I feel like it's a pretty fair fight. I mean, I could see Storm
winning. By the way, Iron Man is being a little more cutthroat in his tactics.
Yep.
And she a little less so, although maybe Krakoa era Storm.
She was, trained by the Morlocks.
She wasn't trained by the Morlocks.
Of the two characters... Only one of them has actually cut a throat.
It's true.
And that is not Iron Man.
Actually, she stabbed her in the heart, I believe.
What's that?
I believe she stabbed her in the heart.
Oh, did she? I thought she cut a throat.
She stabbed her in the throat, yeah.
So she's not cut throat, she's cut heart.
Yeah. Now, but a lot of times she has been, in the 90s and stuff, she kind of returned to the more zen spiritual Aurora.
Is this current Storm, though? Because she's ruthless.
Yeah, current Storm is ruthless.
Yeah, she got Krakoa ruthless.
Yep.
Yeah. But anyway, Moondragon had taken over Thor. Iron Man, I think he supercharged his armor for like one single punch,
mm-hmm.
and it looked really cool because they were like fighting in this temple, and he like punched Thor through all these pillars. Looked dope.
There's sort of a nod to that in the Avengers movie where Thor hits him with lightning and his power charges like 600%.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Yeah, yeah.
There's another in the What If Dark series, which is a What If miniseries. This is a Moon Knight. Base of the What If here is what if Merlin had survived. When Moon Knight goes to face Bushman, in the comics he beat him. In this, Bushman kills Mark Spector, and Marlene takes up the role of not Moon Knight, but what is the character called? The Luminary of the Sun God Ra.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of cool. I think kind of an original character.
That's interesting.
And like, it's a pretty good single issue. It's written by the person who did Hallow's Eve, and. Yep. Is a solid what if story. I kind of enjoyed this, and I would read more of this.
It's a little on the violent side.
They're dark, Nick. They're what if dark.
I mean, I know, but I don't usually see this level of violence. And other than
like
a Max comic,
I do like Moon Knight as something of the gateway to Egyptian lore, mythological lore.
Yeah,
Admittedly, he's coming from like a skewed place. It's not like Thor, who goes and like hangs out in the midst of all of the stuff, and it's just. Oh, yeah, that's normal to him. Moon Knight's still a weird tangent to it, but it's like if you're writing Moon Knight, you have an opportunity to play around with some of that stuff, and that's cool that they're doing a little bit more.
There is also the final issue of Zdarsky's Daredevil, which is kind of an epilogue, seeing where Foggy and Detective North and Elektra and everyone else who's been in Matt's life have been left in the wake of the last arc. I thought it was a really good final issue.
Okay.
It brings in for a landing, and be curious to see where they go from here. Spider-Man by Dan Slott, and the artist who's been working, Vecchio, more on Spider-Boy, his sidekick from another universe. This sounds like the dumbest idea, but I'm kind of enjoying it.
Okay. Well, it has kind of like Spider-Verse written all over it.
Yeah, it does. Dan Slott has done a good job of taking dumb ideas and making them work. Superior Spider-Man, which we all had like so many doubts about when it first happened, is now something that people are always asking for reprints of. People want to get the trade if they would just put it out. Or yep, there, but yep. There isn't one right at the
moment. No, there's a big hardcover.
Coming soon, yeah. Or, yeah. Maybe they'll get around to
they probably will.
Better priced ones. But point is, Dan Slott really came through on Superior Spider-Man, and it's a thing he can do.
And then there's a second issue of Tales of the Titans, which focuses on Raven.
Yep.
Did I miss any of the number ones? I think that's all the number ones.
No, I think that was all the big stuff.
Yeah. Final issue of Groot, new issue of Money Shot, and another issue of The Vigil. Anything else on y'all?
Second issue of Sirens of the City, which I thought was a really good second issue.
Oh, okay. Dave, anything else on your...
Who puts that out, Nick?
It's Boom.
Okay.
Anything else in your stack, Dave, that we didn't talk about?
Nope.
All right. That'll do it for us this week. And we'll be back next week more. Until that time,
yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.